Hello and welcome. You're listening to the first episode of the Citation Podcast with me, Jill McAteer, Head of Employment Law at Citation. As a business, we help and support small and medium-sized businesses to succeed with their HR and health and safety, with over 25 years of happy clients. We created the Citation Podcast to give guidance and best practice to employers, managers, and business owners just like you to help your business stay safe, compliant, and operating at its best. In today's episode, I'll be looking at some of the HR considerations to bear in mind as we make our way down the road out of lockdown. But it does rather beg the question of what normal is going to look like in the second half of 2021 and beyond. What we are hearing is that many employers who thought home working was going to be a permanent full-time arrangement and made plans around reducing their workspace or even abolishing it altogether are now rethinking those plans for a number of reasons. Firstly, they are encountering difficulties with bringing new employees on board and indeed developing junior employees, or in fact, dealing with training issues with employees across the board. This is undoubtedly more challenging when most employees are working remotely. There's also the issue, which is gradually emerging, of the impact on business because of the reduced collaboration between teams. The creativity that's sparked when people are getting together, particularly people who are not working in the same teams. We find that a lot of the communication around businesses now is very team focused, whereas a lot of the creative solutions are sparked when interacting with other teams within the business. There's also evidence emerging of the impact on culture and engagement. I mean, how do you retain your business culture and reinforce that culture when everyone is working apart? The challenges of managing a workforce where some people are based at home and some people are based in the office are also becoming apparent. And many employers are finding there is a danger of a two-tier system emerging, which can cause resentment. And speaking of resentment, we're also seeing a marked increase in the number of grievances which employers are facing. Now, this may be because of the strain on mental health generally from a long period of lockdown, but also it's the fact that so much communication now is either done over Zoom or by email, where people don't really get to see the more social side of their employees, so they're more likely to take offence or to feel excluded. There is also a huge issue emerging with employee burnout. In the early days of lockdown, when vast numbers of employees were working from home from the first time, there was a lot of positive news about how this was actually increasing productivity in many quarters. But now evidence is emerging that in many cases, this increase in productivity is actually down to longer working hours, with the dividing line between home and work becoming extremely blurred at best. This has an enormous adverse impact on employee well-being, with people not being able to shut off. And whilst employers may benefit from this in the short hand, in the long run, this is going to cause many difficulties with employees finding that they either become unwell or feel disenchanted with the organisation. This has become such an issue for employers that many are starting initiatives such as having Zoom-free Fridays or having two-hour lunches on a Wednesday, just so it forces people to take a break and try and reinforce that work-life balance. Employees are also facing some physical challenges with extended periods of home working, with a recent report showing that 25% of employees are actually either working on their sofas or from their bedrooms. So it's likely that while the benefits of home working are also apparent, the idea of long-term home working is not likely to be something which many employers want to adopt. And therefore, many are looking to adopt more hybrid models where employees split their working time between the home and the office, with the idea being, of course, that they get the best of both worlds. The government is likely to be supportive of employers taking this approach. Even before the pandemic, they were very much in favour of flexible working. And in fact, the employment bill announced in the Queen's speech back in 2019 proposed that flexible working should be the default unless employers had a good reason not to offer it to employees. This is now back on the table, and it's understood that the government are planning to launch a consultation shortly on how this would work in practice. Earlier this year, the Flexible Working Task Force was commissioned to undertake a further 18 months of work to develop new policies and guidance in response to changes in the way people work following the pandemic. And of particular interest is how to produce guidance which supports this hybrid way of working. If this mixed approach seems to you to be the best way forward for your business, first of all, I would suggest that you check with your employees that they are also happy with this. Be aware that this is genuinely a third way of managing work, which requires specific considerations. For example, if you want to spend the time that employees have in the office to maximise collaboration, you're going to need to think really carefully about scheduling when people are expected to come into the office to maximise those opportunities. This will also, however, need to take into account any continuing social distancing requirements that you may need to follow. Be also very wary of the emergence of a two-tier system developing between those who work predominantly in the office and those working from home. For example, consider team meetings. This isn't an issue when everyone's in the office or when everyone is at home, but when some colleagues are at home and others are attending in person, it's easy for those who are at home to feel sidelined and out of the conversation, which can, at the very least, impact on their ability to contribute to the meeting, but at worst, leave them feeling excluded or resentful. For example, there are occasions when, at Citation, our teams need to come into the office for specific purposes, and we're now very mindful if some of the members of the team are going to be at home, because then we suggest that everyone joins the meeting on their laptop, and therefore it presents a level playing field and everyone feels they've got an equal opportunity to contribute. You may also need to give some thought to reorganising workspaces if you're going to adopt a hybrid model, which may mean then you can save costs, but it also means that you will have to give thought to those employees, for example, who don't like the idea of hot desking and like to have a regular workstation. And these situations are best handled sensitively. After the break, we'll be looking at when businesses are likely to be given the green light to reopen their offices. Before the break, I was looking at what your future work arrangements might look like when government guidance changes and you can reopen your offices. But when is that guidance likely to change? When the Prime Minister announced the roadmap out of lockdown, he announced the setting up of four roadmap reviews on issues such as the potential use of vaccine status certificates and a review on the future of social distancing. And he explained that the government would be reviewing the guidance on home working once those reviews have been published. Now, last week at the press conference on the 10th of May, he further announced that those reviews were likely to be reporting by the end of May. This leads me to speculate that perhaps we could see a change in the work from home guidance announced either at the end of May or very shortly afterwards. But I think it's unlikely that that change is going to take effect until step four of the roadmap, which is due to take place on the 21st of June. This would give employers plenty of notice to start consulting with their employees about a return. And I think that's likely to be the approach taken by the government, because that's exactly what we saw last summer when the government gave a couple of weeks' notice to employers that they will be able to start planning on bringing people back to the workplace and urged employers to consult with their employees to make sure that transition moved as smoothly as possible. But as a business, what do you do if people are reluctant to come back? Last week, AIRCAS published a report entitled Estimating the Costs of Workplace Conflict, which estimated that the total overall annual cost of conflict to employers is almost £30 billion, which represents an average of over £1,000 for every employee in the UK each year. They view this as a conservative estimate, and although their report is based on findings before the pandemic, they conclude that there's actually the potential for even further conflict as organisations struggle to adapt to the new normal after COVID-19. The government's stance is that the road out of lockdown is cautious but irreversible, and there's a high level of confidence that as we emerge from this current lockdown, it will hopefully be our last. However, it does mean that unlike last summer when the return to the office was seen largely as a respite before we went into lockdown again, changes which are introduced now are likely to be permanent changes, which tends to raise the stakes and makes it more likely to raise conflict between employers and their employees. So I want to turn now to some tips to help make that transition as smooth as possible. First of all, it's really important that you start to think about what your future work arrangements will look like. I'm sure you've been doing this already, but it's important to focus on what has worked for you, what hasn't worked, and importantly, when considering what hasn't worked, consider why it didn't work. Was there anything you could do about that? Is there anything that you could address with your employees to actually improve it? When you've formulated your provisional plans, start communicating with your employees as quickly as possible. I really can't stress enough how important early communication is in ensuring that the transition goes as smoothly as possible. We saw lots of issues cropping up last summer when employers went to huge pains in carrying out their COVID secure risk assessment and putting measures in place, but left communicating the position to their employees to the very last minute, which in turn left employees with a lack of confidence about returning and in many cases a knee-jerk reaction of resisting the return and in some cases a refusal to return. Talking to employees at an early stage will enable you to remind them of any changes to work arrangements you have put in place as part of your COVID secure measures. Many will have been out of the workplace for several months, and you may therefore want to think not only about reminding them of the steps they need to follow when they come back, but also any training they may need to do parts of the job which they haven't been performing, either because they were on furlough or not able to do those aspects when working from home. So what should you do if you meet resistance to your plans? This is broadly likely to arise in two different situations, where either the employee thinks it is unsafe to return, or where the employee is not concerned with their safety in returning, but just simply would prefer to remain working from home. Turning firstly to a situation where the employee is concerned about their safety if they return. It's critically important to understand, first of all, why they feel it is unsafe. If they're clinically vulnerable, clinically extremely vulnerable, or live with those who are in those categories, it's really important to carry out an individual risk assessment and discuss the measures put in place and why you believe it to be safe. Remember, employees who raise health and safety issues have special protection in the law against being dismissed or treated unfavourably because of raising those issues. This applies from the first day of their employment, and from the end of May, this protection is extended to not just your employees, but also to your casual workers. Although they won't have protection against dismissal because, of course, they're not employees, they do have protection against being treated unfavourably. So, for example, if you had a casual worker who came in and complained that they felt the working environment was not safe and you then decided it was more harm than it's worth having them back again, you could potentially face a claim. It's also important to bear in mind that when tribunals look at this, they're not concerned with whether your workplace is actually safe or not. The key issue is whether the employee reasonably believed there was serious and imminent danger and took action to avoid this. So share all the information you have as to why you believe it to be safe. The law doesn't offer any protection to those who unreasonably believe it's unsafe, and the reasonableness of their belief is based on what information is available to them, so please share it. Recently, Leeds Employment Tribunal faced a claim where an employee argued they had been dismissed in breach of this protection because he had refused to return to work because of his concerns regarding contracting COVID, as he had a child at home who was clinically extremely vulnerable. However, his claim failed because the tribunal found that his concerns about contracting COVID were general concerns and there was nothing specific about the workplace. In fact, he didn't help his cause by admitting his employer had put COVID secure measures in place. So first of all, make sure that it is in fact safe, that you have carried out your COVID secure risk assessment. And if there is any vulnerability with regard to those employees, you have carried out an individual risk assessment and then share this information with the employee. If you face a situation where you feel that you have done everything you reasonably can to show your employee it's safe to return, but they still refuse to return to come back, then I think it's very important that you take advice, because this is a new and emerging area for employers and it's important to make sure that you get the best practical guidance. What if the reason your employee doesn't want to come back to the workplace is nothing to do with safety concerns, but because they simply prefer working from home? First of all, I think it's important in that situation to listen to what they're proposing. It could be, for example, that there is a compromise there which will work for both of you. But if you think that you are very much at odds in how you see the future working relationship panning out, then be aware that employees with more than 26 weeks service do have the ability to make a request for flexible working, and that flexible working could revolve around where they work as well as the hours they work or the time they work. Now, the flexible working legislation has been with us for many years, and it's important to remember this is a right to request flexible working and not a right to be given flexible working. There are, in fact, 8 statutory reasons which employers can refuse the application. But quite frankly, the situation for an employer facing a flexible working application pre the pandemic is entirely different to an employer facing one after the pandemic. Previously, it used to be very easy for an employer to say, I don't think that plan would work because of X, Y, and Z. But if the reality is that the employee has been, in fact, performing in their role working from home for the best part of a year, it's going to be very difficult to argue that that is not something which works, unless, of course, you have evidence to show why it's not worked. This is where many employers might find a challenge, because I know that a lot have really put up with arrangements which didn't really work for the business, but because of the lack of alternative, they gritted their teeth and saw it as something that they had to get through. But now may be finding that they have not managed the employees' expectations of whether or not this arrangement was working well. Also, employees may have got into habits in terms of having to balance, for example, childcare responsibilities around their work, which would not form the norm of a working from home arrangement. But again, employers may not have addressed those behaviours. So now, therefore, if you feel it hasn't worked, it's very, very important at this stage that you sit down and explain to your employee why it hasn't worked and provide some tangible evidence to support this. If you don't have that tangible evidence, it is likely that you may struggle in showing that your reason for refusing the flexible working request was reasonable. And again, in those circumstances, I think it's really essential to take advice. Traps to avoid when dealing with these applications is to say no to the request when you don't actually have a clear business rationale for why that request is untenable. Also, it's important that when the application or the request is viewed by a tribunal, they will be looking at the role the employee does and not necessarily focusing on the employee themselves. Whereas I think for employers, very often they think first of all of that particular employee. So, for example, it's not the case that a finance assistant's role couldn't be done from home. It's the fact that that particular person or that employee can't be trusted to work from home on a permanent basis. So it's important to remember you're thinking about whether the role can be done, not in relation to that employee. Of course, if there is issues with regard to the employee's performance and you have tried to tackle those issues and you have got evidence that there have been issues specific to that individual, in those circumstances, that evidence can be taken into account when considering the request. And finally, try not to be overly influenced by reaction of others to the request. So, for example, I know lots of employers who think, well, I don't want to say yes to this particular person because if I say yes to them, I'm going to have lots of applications from other people. Everyone's going to want to do this. You really do have an obligation to deal with the application on its merits. Equally, it wouldn't be appropriate to think, well, I don't want to grant this application because I don't want people to be thinking that they're not pulling their weight, or there's, you know, the people be thinking, well, I don't want to do this job because it should be this person's job and they need to be in the office and why are they at home? Those are undoubtedly difficult situations, but again, it all comes back to the merits of the application in its own right. A question we get a lot from clients is to what extent do they need to get involved in issues around COVID testing and indeed vaccination in order to ensure that they're meeting their health and safety obligations to their employees? Well, the good news is that as an employer, there is no requirement as part of your COVID secure work arrangements that you impose COVID testing or you indeed offer it or you start recording COVID vaccination status. The only area in which the government is actively looking at this is in the area of care, where we're undergoing consultation on the question of whether or not it would be appropriate to impose mandatory vaccination for those working in adult care settings. That consultation is due to come to an end next week, and the government have said they're likely to bring about a change in the law very quickly. But apart from that, it's still very much a matter for employers as to whether or not they want to get involved in these particular areas. My advice certainly would be when it comes to vaccination, that although a policy of encouragement and making sure, for example, that there are no obstacles to your employees being vaccinated, such as, you know, people being concerned about the difficulty of taking time off work to attend vaccination appointments, that's probably the best policy at the minute when there is no, doesn't seem to be any further appetite for compulsory vaccination. Of course, by the end of May, we should have the findings of the review into the part, if any, that might be played by COVID vaccination status certification. And that really will, I think, help inform whether or not this is an area which employers should get more involved in or whether it's something that they can happily stay out of. COVID testing is rather different, and the government have been really strongly pushing employers to get involved in COVID testing. As you know, there are free COVID test kits available, but you did have to sign up to the government's online portal by the 12th of April. For those employers who have done so, the government last week announced a new initiative where you can actually take advantage of the fact that you have taken that step by promoting it. Under the Department of Health and Social Care's We Offer Testing to Our Staff scheme, businesses can actually display a sign which shows that they have made COVID testing available to their employees. And this is an official promotional sign which can be put up either on front of your shop or at checkout areas or on company websites or in social media. And the government announced that it's hoped that by these physical or virtual stickers will offer employees and customers greater reassurance and confidence that those participating businesses are going above and beyond their safer workplace legal duties to improve the safety of premises for staff and customers. So quite a lot of potential competitive advantage there of having this. But as I said, to be eligible, you do need to have signed up to the government portal by the 12th of April. And you need to be using the government-supplied COVID test kits. At the moment, this does not cover privately, albeit independently validated testing programs, but it is the government's intention that those private schemes will also be covered by this in due course, but not at the moment. We're coming to the end of today's episode, so thanks for listening. And if you enjoyed the episode, please feel free to leave us a review. If you're in need of the backing of Citations Experts on any of the topics discussed today, get in touch with us at podcast@citation.co.uk. If you're a Citation client, feel free to give our advice line a call. Alternatively, you can access our useful resources and guides on our website at www.citation.co.uk. Join us next time, where I'll be joined by Michael Brown, one of our dedicated health and safety experts, where we'll be covering the health and safety considerations of a return to the workplace. Thank you and goodbye.